From Alloy AI, this is Shelf Life. How do you grow a relationship with Walmart, the nation's biggest retailer? What are the key metrics buyers care about? What do suppliers need to know about the dynamic between Amazon and Walmart? On every episode of Shelf Life, we answer questions like these and more with the help of leaders across the consumer goods industry. Today, our guest is Bill Sinecor, Vice President of National Accounts at PlayMonster. Bill has a 32-year relationship with Walmart as a sales leader for brands like PlayMonster, Lego, and LeapFrog, and as a consultant, helping suppliers build a relationship with the retail giant. I'm your host, Logan Ensign, Chief Customer Officer at Alloy AI. We'll be back with Bill right after this.
As a consumer brand, you connect with dozens of external partners and internal systems to get a complete picture of your business. Each one is different. Alloy AI makes it easy to connect data from retailers, e-commerce, supply chain partners, and even your own ERP, then easily surface insights to drive sales growth. Every day, brands use Alloy AI to see POS trends, measure promotion performance, and make better replenishment decisions with their retail partners. That's why we're trusted by BIC, Crayola, Valvoline, Melissa & Doug, Bosch, and many more. Get a demo at alloy.ai today.
Bill, welcome to Shelf Life. Excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. I appreciate having the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, it's fantastic. You know, Bill, just diving right in, could you tell us a little bit more about your background and what your responsibilities are today?
Sure. Just as you kind of mentioned, I started my career in CPG with Lego Toys, which is absolutely a wonderful brick that most of us has played with around the world. I did that for several years in different positions in different cities and towns. Then moved on to LeapFrog, which was a startup company at the time. You know, we made an entry into the preschool learning category, which was a lot of fun and some really, really great product that helped a lot of children throughout the world, and did that for many, many years as well. And then I decided to do my own thing and help small to mid-sized customers develop product through pricing and packaging, figuring out the white space on shelves where they could live. And how do you get into Walmart? And then how do you stay at Walmart? And then a couple of years ago, a colleague of mine gave me a call and said, hey, I need some help at Walmart with this brand I have. So I ventured into that, and that's where we are today. So it's been a great run, and CPG is just a great industry to get into.
Well, and looking at your background, it looks like you've got two very clear areas of expertise, toys and games, and working with Walmart. On that first piece, what was attractive to you about getting into toys and games? Was this something on your sort of early career trajectory that you knew you wanted to do? And tell us a little bit more about what has kept you in that industry for the last several decades.
Yeah, to be honest with you, Logan, I wasn't looking to get into toys. You know, I just graduated and I was looking for a job, and the opportunity for Lego came across, and I was like, Lego, you mean the building block? And they're like, absolutely. And as a big customer, I should say my parents were big customers of Lego, but I was able to play with that toy, you know, my first 15 years of my life, and enjoyed it immensely. And, you know, went through the process of interviews, and just, I wanted to be part of this company that I played with. I knew it dearly and I had a lot of passion for it. So that was really how I got into toys. And, you know, toys, to answer your second question, once you kind of get into toys, you never really leave. It's a very small category if you think about it. I mean, there's a lot of players, but the same people kind of move through their lifetime. And I think it's because, number one, if you don't really like to grow up fully as an adult in some areas of your life, of like play, it's wonderful because it's new every single year. We're selling entertainment, right? And entertainment is fun. So it's never the same. Every day is absolutely different. And you never know what's going to be around the corner with innovation in product and in play. And just the, you know, the opportunity to give children a smile on their face every Christmas is a wonderful thing.
Well, and I love getting to know our customers and their product lines and it's got to be such an interesting space to be in. What I've noticed is in the toys and games industry that maybe has been surprising is the innovation that's happening again and again and again. I think it has to be really, really an innovative industry with how much kind of new products come out. You kind of talked about in your background helping with product innovation. Has that been a key part of your functions to date as you've worked in these various toy companies?
Yeah, I think the main idea doesn't really come from me. This comes from inventors. It's come from individuals who have just a deep down passion of creation. How I help and how I really assist is to look at that product, to look at it and say, is there a need for that product? Is a consumer really going to purchase it? And then at what price, right? And look at it and say, okay, what does the package say? Is the package informative so that a customer can look at it within 6 seconds and understand exactly what it is? And does it fill a need for them? And is it the right price point? And does it fit the metrics that Walmart looks at? And is it going to, so is it going to check all those boxes from the end consumer to the retailer that's going to purchase it?
Really, really interesting. Well, shifting gears a bit, I know you're based out in Bentonville. And for folks who aren't super aligned with Walmart, that is Walmart's global headquarters there in Bentonville, Arkansas. I had the pleasure of going there. It's been on my bucket list for a while, and I was there late last year. Fascinating place. Could you speak to a little bit what it's like living in a place that's just so focused on retail and consumer products, and kind of what that community's like?
Yeah, I mean, it has changed immensely. Now, I've only physically been in Bentonville for 10 years. So, but for 30 years, I traveled back and forth from Chicago, where I lived most of my life. And, you know, 30 years ago, it was one place in time. And today it is absolutely a totally different place. And in a lot of aspects, it's grown and it's nurtured and matured. And it is now it's a global community of individuals from all over the world that are living here, not just from different states, but from different parts of the world have now come to Bentonville. And, you know, with the help of the Hunt family and the Walton family and the Tyson family, this, you know, Northwest Arkansas, as it's called, has grown immensely. So it's pretty neat. And coming from a really diverse cultural place like Chicago, when I first got here, even 10 years ago, it was like, you know, it was pretty normal, I would say. It was just a good Midwestern town. And now I see the absolute growth in buildings and culture and different things to do. Restaurants have grown. The people have grown. A lot of families moving in. So it's a really neat place to be.
Well, and I think if they've claimed the moniker of the mountain biking capital of the world as well, which is surprising to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're into biking, mountain biking, as well as trail bikes, you know, some of those families have done a wonderful service to this community by purchasing land on a 30-mile track between Fayetteville and Bentonville. And you can ride your bike without any, you know, cars or anything else for 30 miles from square to square. And you can do that all day. You can ride parts of it. So a wonderful outdoor area in Arkansas.
Well, and I just have this vision in my mind of dinner parties or backyard barbecues where people sit around talking about OTIF rates and rollback and promotion. I mean, retail is such a big part of probably most people have connections to Walmart and to the retail CPG space.
You know, absolutely. You get individuals that are other vendors such as myself, but in different categories, right? And, you know, housewares and outdoor sports and food. So, and garments. So you get to talk with those people as neighbors. And then you get individuals who maybe support Walmart and they work for J.B. Hunt. And they talk about the trucking part of the whole thing. So, and then you get the individuals who work on the software companies that talk about the tech portion of how they assist Walmart. So you kind of get the whole gambit, as well as then you get to talk with everyday people who are consumers. So you get the full circle of retail in a very, very small area of the country.
Very, very interesting. Very neat. Very neat. Well, Bill, since you have such an expertise in kind of working with retailers and specifically with Walmart, would love to just get your perspective on, as you work with your buyer, as other brands work with their buyers, what are some of the trends you see on what buyers are looking for, the key metrics that are important to you in running your business? And maybe we can talk about getting into Walmart and building those relationships at Walmart specifically.
Well, first and foremost, you know, what Walmart is looking for, obviously, is product that individuals and consumer wants, right? As well as helping them better their life on every day. And that's usually, it could be price, it could be options of a product, but how do we make the consumer's day a lot better, day in and day out? And of course, you know, let's give them a great price, but obviously Walmart doesn't do this for fun. You know, they need to make their margins and you need to know those, but then you also have to pay attention to your contribution margin, you know, as a vendor, right? You know, you have to make money, you have to cover your costs, and you've got to look at your capabilities. So, you know, those are the main things that Walmart wants to see. And, you know, they've been really open, at least with me over the last, my whole career of bringing products to them, to even just to see them and get an opportunity to see them and, you know, take my calls or my emails and say, yeah, I'll give you 20 minutes or 15, or what do you need, a half hour? So they've afforded me a great opportunity in my life with different products. So that's really what they want to see at Walmart.
So what I'm hearing is a great product trumps everything,
right,
that consumers are going to want to buy.
That's right.
And then obviously there's profitability and pricing consideration in there as well, but starting with the end consumer.
Right. And then there's capacity. Do you have the capacity to fuel a Walmart in their 4,000 locations? I mean, not everybody has the manufacturing facilities to produce what they need, because there's such a giant within the velocity of your product. And most vendors today, not all, but most of them, their number one customer is Walmart, because of just the buying power and the amount of traffic that they get in stores and the amount of looks that Walmart.com is now getting online and, you know, delivery now and pickup at store. So, you know, Walmart's kind of checked all the boxes regarding where the eyes of the consumer are and where they want to be. So it's a lot of different, you know, disciplines that Walmart looks at from a vendor standpoint.
Makes sense. And so when you kind of have those components together, how do you find yourself making that case to Walmart, to a Walmart buyer? What are some keys in being able to effectively communicate, it's a great product, the pricing's right, we can support you at scale from a supply chain perspective? Kind of how do you go through that exercise and maybe giving some advice to some listeners who may not have as mature of a relationship as you do with Walmart?
Sure. There's a couple different ways. If you have the budget or the opportunities to test consumers on a grand scale, I mean, a couple thousand consumers, you do test markets with them and you note that data. You're giving Walmart the opportunity to say, hey, listen, we've done a great deal of testing with end consumer. You know, this item or this group of items, you know, checks the top two boxes of price and of value and of innovation. And yes, I would purchase it. So you go through a lot of that. Secondly, a lot of vendors will start a product on Amazon very cheaply. You're able to go ahead and set up a page, get it rolling, you know, do some social media with that, and then start to get reviews and then multiple reviews and five-star reviews. And, you know, those reviews are looked at by the entire world, not just the consumer. You know, when you're looking for a product on Amazon, you're really not sure which one you want to buy. There might be 10 on the page. A lot of us look at, you know, star rankings, right? Give me the fives and the fours. Well, there's no different than a Walmart merchant or a merchant team will start to look at all the different products in their category and say, hey, you know, look at this product starting to gain reviews, gain five-star ratings. And it's something we need to start to look at. So, you know, we've done that where you kind of grow a product over 18 months or so on Amazon, and you start to garner that, and then you bring it to their attention. I mean, they're looking at so many different things every day. The whole world is bringing them product to get on that shelf. And, you know, that shelf space is worth millions of dollars. And you've got to prove your point, you know, that the consumer wants that product, in a Walmart consumer, be specific.
That's fascinating. So not just at the consumer level, people looking at reviews on Amazon want to make sure they're buying a high quality product that the kids are going to play with, but actually that these big retailers are looking at Amazon as a potential testing ground for new products, and building that e-commerce presence, great reviews is it a way to get in potentially?
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, if they see a product with high reviews and so forth, they obviously want to care, you know, purchase it for their customer, because they have such a big customer base, and you know, they can go from zero to 50,000 units in 4 or 5 months easily because of the amount of traffic they get in those stores. They can pull that market share to them very, very quickly, and they know that. So, but they need testing as well. It costs a lot of money just to take a, chance on a product. And you pull a product out, you put my product in. If it doesn't perform, you've not only lost the sales of what you had in your hand there, but you also lost even additional because of what mine did not produce.
In your world, do you find yourself even collaborating with e-commerce teams internally at Play Monster? And this is part of kind of the new product launch strategy. How does that work internally, knowing that this dynamic exists?
Oh, absolutely. It's a consortium of individuals within our company that look at our own PlayMonster.com website and what's selling there, as well as Amazon and others out there and what is selling. There's many products we have and others vendors have on obviously on Amazon. We can put our full portfolio of products on there. Whereas, Walmart only has a dedicated amount of space and so does Target. And anybody that has a physical store only has so many spots. So, as a vendor, we'd love them to carry everything, right? But that doesn't even make sense either, because some items are just not as profitable for Walmart or Target as they may be for an Amazon. So we're constantly looking at POS, and that's where, Alloy has really helped us build different reports and look at different metrics on a daily basis, because, your software updates every single morning, and by 10 o'clock, I can have a dashboard of what happened yesterday and make changes to it if we need to, or change pricing or look at opportunities and look at rates of sale. And so there's just, a plethora of metrics using Alloy that has really helped us.
Well, that's great to hear. That's helpful. You'd mentioned you how Bentonville has shifted over the 10 years that you've been there. I'm curious, as you think about Walmart as a retailer, how they've changed over the last decade and what you're noticing about the way they work with their suppliers and how those strategic objectives have shifted over time.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've seen is that they've kind of gone to a new kind of buying format where they have multiple buyers within the same category, and they're supported by administrators within there as well as replenishment and so forth. So they have teams. The teams have gotten really young. Either I'm getting really old or they're getting really, really young. So they've gone young, and that's great. I mean, some of these buyers are a year out of college, and they're sitting at a $600-700 million, as I call it, desk. So I've found that they're very open because they are younger, and maybe they just haven't been in the market long enough, but they're very open to ideas and new things and, pushing the business forward and just wanting to hear my experiences with Walmart and what's worked, what hasn't worked. And it's been a big change in 10 years in those buying desks. So.
Fascinating. So there's more openness to new ideas. Is it more kind of data driven, or, have there been other components as maybe the demographic of the buyer has changed where you've had to kind of change to meet them where they are?
Absolutely. They've always been data driven, Walmart. You could always, there's always 10 or 12 metrics that they've always wanted to see. And that as a vendor, you better be up to date on those every week. At any point in time, the phone call would come, or during the meeting, they'd want to see it. Now everybody has it on their phone, right? The buyers can look on their phone, they get up in the morning and take a look at sales, who's not performing, who is. And today's, buyer, you better know that before them. And you better bring them a solution if there is a problem or a great opportunity and say, hey, this is what I'm seeing this week. Let's do X, Y, and Z. And I think we can increase sales. We can double it in the next 2 months. Or triple it, or whatever. Or we might have a situation where we're running out of inventory, and I just want to make you aware of this. I have a solution for you. So yeah, the analytics part of it now used to be on a weekly basis. Now it's on a daily basis. So that's changed immensely.
I'm hearing maybe a double-edged sword. They're more potentially persuadable, but also you've got to be on top of your game, it sounds like, to be competitive in that environment.
Yeah, you got to have a case, right? You have a case for what you're doing, and I always say, let's have two or three solutions to a situation, because you never know where they're coming from. Different buyers have different metrics. They always want to sell more. That's the number one metrics they all have. But some of them have different ideas of what else is underlying that they want to look at.
Really, really interesting, Bill. Well, one more topic for you I'd love to unpack a little bit. I know it's top of mind for a lot of industries, but I know it's particularly top of mind for toys and games around sustainability. I know that this is important to consumers, and it's also very important to brands. And so, you know, how are you thinking about sustainability at PlayMonster? You know, how does this play in the relationship with Walmart? Could you speak a little bit to sustainability efforts and how you all think about that in relationship to working with Walmart?
Sure. Yeah. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, it's a big agenda item for Walmart, and it's a great one because, you know, at the end of the day, we all live on this planet, and we want it to be here for our kids and our grandkids, and we want it to be enjoyable. So the big picture is it's a great picture. So some of the things we are and currently doing at PlayMonster and also researching for the future is to eliminate as much plastic from our packaging. As much as we can, we want that out. We don't want that in consumers' hands. Then it goes into the disposal and into our, you know, our garbage waste facilities, and it just kind of sits there for, what is it, 25 years or 30 years. So we're trying to take plastics out. We're also looking at recycled paper. You know, a lot of our products are games. What are games? They're cardboard, right? So it's a very easy one to do that. Now, to do that economically has been a little bit of a challenge, but it's getting much better. And we will take a little bit, obviously, less profit if we can come out with a recycled product. And the third part of it is we're looking at, in this next fall, fall 24, we're coming out with two different, what we call upcycle products, where it's a toy, but you're using plastics from water bottles or paper, and you're going to be able to make jewelry with those. So not only is there a message there for the consumer that you're helping and you're recycling, but then you're also able to make a bracelet or a necklace with the toy that we're coming out with. So it's very unique.
Wow, that sounds really, really neat. When does that come out?
That'll hit shelves in June of 24.
All right. I have three young kids, so we're going to circle that time horizon there.
That'd be excellent.
Well, fantastic, Bill. That sounds like really, really compelling initiatives there. Bill, really appreciate you making time for this conversation, and thanks for joining us on Shelf Life.
Yeah, Logan, appreciate it.
You've been listening to Bill Sinicor, Vice President of National Accounts at PlayMonster. That's all for this week. See you next time on Shelf Life.